Y'all better not come to my studio with that fake shit. Y'all better not come to my funeral with that fake shit. Y'all better off realizing there's nothing that y'all could do with me. All I ever ask is keep it 8 more than 92 with me. 100.
What up, though? iHeartMiko podcast, episode 93. I've done an episode back in the day called Father Knows Best, and a lot of you really loved that episode, and you keep asking me to have my father on again. And so I took advantage of the Thanksgiving that I don't celebrate, but I asked my dad to fly in because, first of all, you know, Aiden was out the whole week and I was really annoyed with playing with him. So I needed somebody else to play with him. So I thought of you. Second, you know that we feed the homeless Thanksgiving week every year. And you were here last year with us when we did it and you seemed to enjoy it a lot.
And so, totally did.
So you came in this year. Did you like it this year as well?
I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, so, you know, there was a couple of reasons that I wanted you in town. And then the third one was, of course, to get you on my podcast again, like live. Because we've been planning on doing it over the phone a couple of times, but
right. We
just never, something always happened. And I just never was, you know, getting around to getting you on. But
right. Since
I'm like, you're in town, we might as well, you know,
do this thing.
So how are you enjoying Tampa? First of all, this is your second time living here, because last year you lived with us in Tampa. We lived in Odessa,
right?
And that was like a 6,500 square foot house with a pool, a hot tub, a big backyard, a media room, 6 bedrooms. Like, it was incredible, right?
It was wonderful.
Love that house, but because Brent was late so many times, because of how far it is, we decided to move into the city in a high rise,
right?
So that meant you couldn't stay with us, too, because we only have 3 bedrooms here.
Right.
But you've been here for about a week. What do you think of the differences?
Well, there's a big difference. But the thing that I like about being in this location is the fact that there's a lot of things to do around here.
Yeah.
You know, I go walking 3 miles one way, and I can venture out and see a lot of things, interact with a lot of people. So for me, you know, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, it's just beautiful.
I like that we're in the city because, you know, living up in Odessa, it felt like we were in Trump County. You know, you remember all our neighbors had those Trump signs up and everything. And Aiden got in a fight on a bus with some kids because he was saying his mom wasn't voting for Trump. And, you know, we live in a Republican neighborhood. But it was just a little crazy. But being down here just seems like city life is way different. Right. Everybody, nobody's really uptight, and it's not just white people down here. You see a mixture of different people.
You see a diverse crowd here.
Yeah.
A very diverse crowd.
Because up there it was just white.
Right.
It was just all white. And I was like, damn, so it's like a different city. And then we've got this view. I missed the pool. I missed the little backyard, the sounds, you know, all that. But this view is pretty dope.
The view is wonderful. I love the view.
Yeah.
Give me an opportunity to really concentrate and think about things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just love that.
I like to smoke weed on the balcony and look at the view. That's, you know.
Well, you know.
That's more of why I love the view. It just looks good. And then you smoke, it just makes it like magical. Like you floating on a carpet, looking at the lights and all of the city lights of Tampa.
Okay.
It's kind of fun.
Okay.
Dad, did you smoke weed back in the day?
I sold weed back in
you
the day.
You sold weed, but you didn't smoke it?
I smoked it and I sold it.
Did you like it?
I loved it.
What? How come you don't smoke it anymore?
Well, today is not, it's really not for me today.
Why?
I have other things that I would rather do than get off into the weed deal. I did weed because at that particular time, for me, I made money at it.
Uh-huh.
It was exciting. And I used to have a sign in my car that used to say, cash, grass, or ass.
Oh my God. That sounds like something in a movie.
No, that's what, that was
real.
That was real?
So that's what you took for the weed? Cash,
grass.
Or ass. Oh, wow.
Yeah. You just couldn't ride free.
Okay. You had to give up something.
You had to give up something.
Oh, my God. You know, that is, this is crazy that you bring that up, because right now it's so rapey. Yeah. Like, America is in a very rapey town. Could you imagine somebody having that in their car right now? What do you think people would say?
That would be out of order now.
Yeah, a lot of things are different.
Yeah, totally different from the time when I was a 19-year-old.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of this Senator Moore who said 30 years ago, sleeping with a 14-year-old was kind of normal if you were 32, like he was saying, that was a normal thing in the past. Like, what is your opinion on that?
Well, I look at it from the standpoint, it was normal for him from the geographical area that he was in the South, mm-hmm. and from the culture that he's in, it was normal for them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But there's nothing normal about a 32-year-old man interacting with a 14-year-old child, period.
Right.
Now, that's just out of question.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So a lot of people that didn't listen to the first podcast, they might listen now, but a lot of them don't know, you know, anything about you or, you know, your background. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to, again, just kind of tell my listeners who you are, where you grew up, you know, kind of how you met my mom, whatever, you know, whatever you want to, you know, get off. And so they can kind of get to know you a little bit.
Well, one of the ways that they can really get to know me is to contact me. My ministry is the Reveal Word Ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And what I deal with is a lot of controversial areas of the gospel and how we perceive things,
mm-hmm.
from a traditional standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not into the traditional factor that has been passed down to us from generation to generation, because I believe that the gospel is expanding and that we have more to operate from than just the mundaneness of how it's being preached and taught to us today. You know, a lot of time people are caught up in the imagery of Christianity, and Christianity imagery is a Caucasian factor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not my mindset.
You're talking about Christianity from an African mindset?
Well, I'm talking about Christianity from a pure biblical standpoint. When you really look at the scriptures, Christianity was, according to the scriptures, was first offered to the black race before it was offered to the Caucasian race. But you'd never hear that preached or taught in the traditional churches.
I've heard this on social media before, that people are saying that Christianity was originally, and I've heard this about Judaism as well, like, mm-hmm. that these were all black religions, or, you know, African-American religions.
Well, one thing that I want to establish is I'm not pro-black, pro-white. I'm pro-truth.
Mm-hmm.
I am pro-truth, and however truth present itself is how I have to accept it.
And can I be pro-truth and pro-black?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yes, you can. Because there is a dire need in the black community, we have to give them the necessary truth that's going to enable them to lift themselves up above the traditional factor that has been given to them of self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And seeing themselves as being unimportant. You know, because when you really look at the scriptures now, you know, we take our children to church and stuff like that, and we can identify with all cultures of people. But when it comes down to us, what part do we play in scriptures? did we just drop out of the sky?
Mm-hmm.
What part do we play in the scriptures? When I look at the scriptures and I really study the scriptures, I see a thread of continuous in the African culture and scriptures. When you go all the way back, you see black females that's involved in the lineage of Jesus Christ.
So where do you find these scriptures? Because these aren't in the Bible.
Oh, yes, they are.
Where?
from Genesis until the New Testament.
So give me an example. What is something that most people don't know is speaking of black women?
Well, what one of the main factors is Abraham had a wife who had children by this lady named Keturah. Keturah was a black woman, and she mothered six children after Sarah, Abraham's wife, died. Then there is the Queen of Sheba, who came from the south in the days of Solomon to hear his wisdom. And she ended up leaving Jerusalem pregnant.
Oh.
By Solomon.
And she's a queen.
And she was a queen.
So they was out there hoeing way back in the day. This is natural.
There was no
DNA test or nothing back then.
No.
Wow. Yeah. So if I understand you establishing that there's black people in the Bible, but how do you answer questions for people like me who say, like, is man written? Like, are you reading some new, I've never heard of any Bible that wasn't man written, you know, like, how is it that Jesus said all these things and he didn't write any part of the Bible?
Well, put it to you in a sense of metaphor.
Okay.
This is an ink pen that I'm holding in my hand, right?
Yes.
It is a vessel by which something can be written.
Mm-hmm.
The ink that's in the pen is designed to scribe out what I would write out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Man is basically the vessel by which God is used to channel his information to the rest of the human family. The ink or the spirit of man is governed by the spirit of God. Now, when you look at the 66 books of the Bible and the time in which the Bible was written, none of those guys really knew each other, but the consistency of the scriptures is what you have to look at. You have to look at that there was an invisible hand that was moving on the minds of those guys to put together the information that was necessary for man to have the information from God.
But let's just say, I believe that. Let's just say from that time that happened. It is also my belief that this has been written multiple times,
sure,
by different people.
Sure.
And so why would I believe something that is not in its original form? Like, what if it was completely different originally? Like, how do I know that this is really true? Because there's so many things that just don't make sense in it, you know?
Well, there's an old saying, the proof is in the pudding.
Okay.
And whatever God says to be truth, there have to be evidence of that factor, right?
Yes.
Okay, so if the Lord says to a person to, I want you to hear the gospel, I want you to believe the gospel, and if you believe the gospel, then I want you to repent, and I want you to be baptized in Jesus' name, in my holy name, and you shall receive the remission of your sins. And after you do that, then you shall receive the gift of the Holy Ghost. With the evidence of speaking in tongues, as the Spirit of God give utterance. If you believe that, and if that happened to you, like the scripture says, then that's the proof.
Yeah, but I don't believe it. Every time I see somebody get the Holy Ghost, I think they're full of, you know what? I really don't believe it. It's hard for me to believe it because I know so many fakers. Mm-hmm. I know so many fake people. I know, you know, the church is a very evil place to me, you sure. know? And so it's like, to me, it just seems like if they are preaching from this same book, I don't really want anything to do with them.
Okay.
Like nothing, because it just seems like, to me, if you're really a true, you work for God and you're just a vessel, you know, as a minister, and you have a private jet, and yeah. you know, you live this incredible life and all yeah. this stuff, like how am I supposed to believe that you're supposed to live like that? And the people that you're taking the money from are supposed to be struggling the way that they are.
And that's a real concern. That's really real. And a lot of time ministers put themselves in that awkward position. And they say they represent Christ. And Christ never owned anything other than what he manufactured on the behalf of the poor people. And how do we justify having millions or sometimes $1 billion and people are struggling,
homeless, starving,
so forth? You know, it's just like the initiative that you started with the feeding of the hungry mm-hmm. Here in Tampa. That's a good initiative. Now, some ministry should be doing that diligently, because that is a true calling of compassion. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have compassion in your heart for people, because the bottom line is this, whatever we do in life, ain't nothing gonna last. And the only thing that matters is how we treat one another. You know, mm-hmm. the other day I went walking and, I seen some people laying out on the sidewalk, and I said to myself, this country is the richest country in the world. This state is a rich state. Mm-hmm. No one should be homeless sleeping on a bench. So
you would think.
Yeah. So what is the problem, you know?
Greed.
Greed. Greed is the problem. And if greed is the problem, what is the solution? Charity.
Well, charity. You know, everybody has the fake charity where yeah. you do things and it's just a tax write-off. You're not really, you know, I don't really understand how the American Cancer Society, you know, is only giving 10% of the money that they get from donations to actually, you know, help cancer patients. Like, I just think stuff like that is ridiculous. And they're the biggest charity. Everybody's trying to give to them, and Susan G. Komen her biggest sponsor is Danone yogurt, and dairy is definitely a major cause of cancer. It's become the number one dietary form of cancer, and it just seems to me like the bigger you are, the more corrupt and more horrible you are. And that's what I think of religion. That's just how I feel, and I don't really know how to not feel that way. I believe there is God. Everything that's happening could not happen without a God, someone, something. Right. But I just don't know what it is.
Right. Well, you have a real cause of concern there. And I'm not going to try to justify what people are doing, because they know that they're doing things that's wrong. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to give an answer for that. You know, I'm going to have to give an answer for what I know and for what I'm responsible for. That's the thing that I'm going to focus my attention on, is how I've been given a charge to do what I'm supposed to do. And then I'm going to give a response or a response to that to God one day. You know, I'm going to be held accountable. Okay. So I'm going to make sure that I'm doing the right things. You know, when you look at institution like the Salvation Army, it started off as a good initiative. Mm-hmm. But it's somewhere down the line, it got
greed
sidetracked.
Yeah.
And now the Salvation Army is a entity that is pulling in billions of dollars.
Okay. Right.
And when you look at how people are donating to them and how the institution of the Salvation Army is set up, do you really think that they want people to be independent of them? No.
No.
Because that's how they get their allocation of money. Mm-hmm. So they don't want you to be independent. They want you to be dependent. Okay.
Right.
So Jesus came into the world to heal the brokenhearted, to redeem them that who was lost, and to cure. In our society today, you don't even hear the word cure anymore. It's treatment.
Yeah, because nobody's, there's no money in cure.
There is no money. There is no money in cure.
Right.
The last cure that was noted in the medical field was smallpox. Mm. Back in the 50s. And they said, no, that's not going to happen again. So the money is made in treatment. Okay? The cancer institution, do you think they want people to come in there into the hospital and cure people of cancer?
No.
Do you think the law enforcement agency really want to stop criminals or the crime?
No.
That's not real. Okay? But individual, just like in the government, money is made from people being incarcerated. They don't want to prevent crime.
Mm-mm.
You know, because then
they
will lose monies.
Yeah.
Tons of money.
Right.
When you have over 2 million people incarcerated, can you imagine what kind of budget that is?
Yeah.
Nationally?
Yeah.
What type of money machinery is involved in that calculation?
Yeah, it's a billion-dollar industry.
You know?
And that's why people are always saying the dumbest things on social media. A lot of, you know, mostly white or ignorant people from whatever race, color, creed, whatever you want to call them. They say things like, well, you know, how do you get mad at there being that many black people in jail when they're doing crime? And just today, there was a guy that was freed and he got $100,000 or something because he got a lawyer and proved that the cop planted a gun on him. There was just 15 men that were freed from crimes they never committed last month as well. It's like people are starting to see that a lot of these men were not guilty of any type of crime.
Sure.
You know, like they were just really saying to themselves, okay, we're getting low on criminals. We need to keep these jails full. You guys need to get out there and get us some bodies in these jails.
Right.
And people don't understand that once you're in that system, when you get out, there's nothing waiting for you. There's no one that wants to hire you, give you a job. So what do? You revert back to some type of crime because now it's like you got to feed your family, your girl, your baby mama looking at you crazy because you have no money.
Right.
And I just always tell people, don't say what you wouldn't do in a situation you've never been in.
That's right.
You don't know what you would do.
That's right.
If you were looking at your starving child.
That's right.
You know, and people get judged all the time, but sometimes it's hard. It's really hard. And that's why when Denzel said something about it starts at home, I don't know if you saw that recently. Denzel Washington did some interview and he was basically saying that we can't blame the prison population on poor policing. It starts at home, like it's us. And I was just like, damn, I can't believe he said that. Like, it's almost like he doesn't realize, you know, what's really happening. I get it. There are criminals in every color, but you can't sit here and tell me that we're the only ones committing the crime.
No, we're not. You know, what you said struck a chord with me because I remember when you was a baby, I had lost my job and I had determined I was not going to allow you to suffer or your mom to suffer because I had lost my job. So I said, whatever it was going to take for me to make sure that you all survive, that was the thing that I was going to do. you know, and I did a lot of things that was wrong, mm-hmm. you know, to ensure that you all had something in the house, you know. I committed
crime.
You
were a bad guy.
Yeah, I was a bad guy, and I'm not proud of it. But what you said struck a chord because, you know, I was looking at the fact that you were my child, and I was not going to allow you to suffer.
Right.
You know, whatever it was going to take for me to make sure that you had something, that was going to be the thing that I was going to do regardless. You know, if I had to go to jail, then I was just going to have to go to jail. But I was going to make
sure
that
take that gamble.
I was going to take that gamble. Yeah.
A lot of people have never been in that situation. They don't even know what it's like. I posted this video on Instagram and there was a race. This guy was like, I got $100. And it was like a bunch of the athletes. Did you see that?
Yeah.
And he said, you know, everybody starts this line, and then you get to take all these steps forward if you have both parents in the house.
Right.
If you had access to free tutoring.
Right.
If you ever had to pay, never had to pay for your parents' bills or, like, you needed to help out with the bills and you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
If you had, if you knew every night you were going to have a meal on your table.
Right.
And then you see all these white kids in the front of this line, and the black all the black kids is all the way at the back.
Right.
And it's like people really don't think about the advantages they have in life, you know. And then they also don't understand that then they have these police that are poorly policing their communities, roughing them up for no reason, planting drugs on them to get them arrested, you know, just because of numbers and things they have to do. They don't even understand that, you know, and how you could it could mess with your mind.
Sure it can.
You know, your dad's not there because of this type of environment, because he may have, you know, done something illegal to keep food on the table. Like, and so he's not there. So you have a mother trying to raise her kids by herself, and the boy becomes the dad. Like, you got to go do something now.
Right.
A lot of these people have no idea what it's like to suffer in that way and to really be out here, like, really, like, fending for yourself.
Well, they have no idea of what it's like to be black.
Right.
To be black in America is a real test. It's a real test of your, especially being a black man, it's a real test of your manhood. You know, God created me a man, and I'm going to be a man until the day I die. My manhood is not for sale, and I'm not going to cheapen my manhood by allowing this institution of the matrix of false information to dwindle my thinking away. God has given me a mind to think and to understand what is necessary for me to live out my purpose in life. Everyone has purpose.
Yeah.
Everybody have purpose.
Brent and I were talking about that earlier today. Oh my God. Remember that, Brent? Brent is sitting in here, y'all, listening.
My dear son-in-law. And
watching film. Brent and I were talking about it earlier today, and he was saying how he doesn't believe that we were put here to work like we do, like to really work and struggle and not like, and he goes, and I said, and a lot of us are working jobs we hate. It's not even like our purpose in life. It's not even like what it is that we were destined to, and put here to do.
Mm-hmm.
You end up, because of whatever environment you were raised in and born into, you end up having to just work to eat, to survive, to keep a roof over your head. And your true passion is just passing you by. Like, you're never able to, you know, tap into that, because you can't take off from work to build, you know, whatever it is, your business or your passion, whatever, to achieve it, because you have to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like misery.
Right. That's right. You know, and once you find out what your real purpose is in life, life then become a joy.
Mm-hmm.
I have joy now in my heart because I understand my purpose. I understand my destiny, you know,
mm-hmm.
and nothing can shorten my destiny. But when God says for me to leave, then I'm going to leave. Back in 2012, when I had my heart attack, stroke, and brain aneurysm. That seemed like it should have taken me out. No, it couldn't take me out because I hadn't fulfilled my purpose yet. Okay. When I left here in January, I remember when I was in the house, I was sitting down and quietly the thought came to my mind. This was January the 15th. The thought came to my mind, can you trust me? Absolutely. And I thought about that. I said, absolutely. Trust you? I have to think about that because that mean to me that everything that I have depended upon will be taken away from me. So after thinking about it, I got down on my knees and I said, Lord, I can trust you absolutely. And I went back in my memory and I started thinking about all the people who had absolute trust in God. When I left Tampa, January the 25th, I came to St. Louis and everything was fine. It was on a Wednesday. I never forget that. And that Wednesday, I was fine. Mm-hmm. That Thursday, I went to bed. I was fine. And that Friday, I woke up. I couldn't talk.
Yeah, that was so crazy.
I couldn't talk. I couldn't say a word. And I'm in my mind.
That was right after this whole I trust you God thing. Yeah. See, you're trying to make me believe. What are you trying to do over here? Because it's you. You want me to believe you.
I woke up and I tried to talk and I couldn't say a word. And the words was in my mind, but it couldn't come out of my mouth. And I'm struggling. I'm trying to say something and it wouldn't come out. And I'm about to panic now.
Right.
So I'm at my cousin's house and I get him to talk to my sister. And I'm trying to talk to my sister. And she said, take him to the hospital.
Right.
So he rushed me to the hospital. And he get all of my information from me. And they said, well, Mr. Metcalf, you didn't have a stroke. And I'm like,
Right, you don't know what
to do. I can't say anything, you know. So I'm in the hospital for, they stick me with the IV and stuff here. I'm in the hospital for 3 days.
Right.
Can't talk. Can't say a word. But the word of God came back to me and asked me that question again.
Oh, God. And he, during the stroke?
Can you trust me? Absolutely. And I said, yes. And guess what happened?
You started talking.
I started talking.
I'm not listening to you, Dad. Is this true?
It's true.
I don't believe it. Really?
It's true. It's true.
Here's my. What are you trying to say? It was Jesus or it was God?
It was Jesus.
What did he look like? Was he black?
No.
What color was he?
Don't know.
How do you know he wasn't black?
He's not black. He's a spirit.
Oh, God.
Listen, here's my hand. Here's my hand to God. Once I acknowledge the fact
that you trust
that
him,
I can trust him.
You started talking.
I started talking.
So if I was to get something like that, it would have to happen like that for me to believe it because I don't know.
Well, it don't have to happen like that for you. It can be differently. Yeah. It can be totally different. That was for me. That was my encounter. That was my encounter. And so I am very happy to have that encounter because I look at it from this standpoint that no matter what, God has me in his hand and I have a destiny to fulfill and I have a purpose to fulfill.
And I believe that too. But,
and there is nothing that can change that.
But how do you know that it's Jesus? I know that there's a God and I believe I have a purpose and I have a conversation with him every day. We have a relationship. We have understanding.
Okay. How do you know you have a relationship?
Because when I talk to him, like things happen in my life when I talk to him.
How do you know that he's doing that?
Because I ask him questions.
You ask him questions. Yeah. And how do you know he's responding to you?
Because things change in my life based on the questions that I ask him.
So you're saying to me then that because you have a relationship with him, you know his voice.
Yes, I know how he talks to me.
Okay, so yes. I'm saying to you, the question that you asked me, how do I know?
But how do I don't know? I don't know him as Jesus. I don't.
Okay.
I don't know that he. I don't know his name.
Okay.
He doesn't ever tell me his name.
Well, he introduced himself to me.
Oh my God, I'm not. I'm not. I don't believe you.
I'm telling you the truth.
All right. I'm waiting for my God to reveal who he is to me
I will not lie to you.
I believe you. That's what I'm saying. I don't think you would lie to me, but it's just hard for me. Like, I've never experienced anything like that, and I've never heard his voice or anything. I just know that, you know, I have conversations with who I call God and talk to him about some of the things that I'm going through, and I ask him to give me answers, and a lot of things change in my life in that way based on the questions that I've asked and the way, you know, things move, like certain friends and relationships and just, you know, everything.
And see, that's a lead off into the next.
Even my husband, I pray for him all the time, and look at how successful he is.
And see, and that's that's a lead off into another subject, because when it comes down to the black female, I don't think a lot of the black females understand the power that they have and the power that is available to them to change situations in their lives and in the lives of their family. One of the mm-hmm. things that my mom did for me when I was a young man, she used to be afraid that one day somebody was going to knock on the door and one night, 2 o'clock in the morning, say, "Your son is dead."
Mm.
So she couldn't really live under that stress any longer. So you know what she did?
What?
She said, "I prayed and put you in the hands of God, son, and then I went to sleep."
Mm.
She said, "I put you in God's hand, and then I went to sleep." The black female have a special relationship where they can use a secret weapon.
Was that the vagina?
No. Brent.
It's not a blowjob?
No.
It's not food?
No.
Those are all the three things I'm good at.
You talking to your dad. Jesus. You talking to your father.
You know my mother.
You talking to your dad.
You were the one who told me about my mother.
You talking to your father.
Okay, so it's not those three things. So what is it that we have that is our secret weapon?
Your secret weapon is your closet.
Our closet?
Mm-hmm.
It's in our closet.
Mm-hmm.
Clothing?
No, it's your prayer closet.
My prayer closet?
Right.
Oh, he done went deep. He done went all the way to church on me praying.
You can go into your prayer closet.
Okay.
And you can pray and ask God to dispatch an angel to your spouse. Your spouse might be thinking about going out and doing something. And you can say, "Lord, let the angels intercede on his behalf." And all of a sudden, that spouse will change his mind and come back and say, "You know, I was thinking about doing this," and all of a sudden.
So he's going to tell you, "You know what? I was just about to sleep with this side chick, but an angel came down and told me not to do it."
I'm not going to say he's going to confess all that, but I'm going to say this here.
Okay.
That his steps can be interfered with.
Okay. If through prayer.
Through prayer. Yeah.
Okay.
Through prayer.
That's fair. I can get with that.
Okay. Okay. You can get with that.
I can get with that.
Okay.
So let me,
I'm looking for my queen.
And how old are you, Dad? Because you just 60. skipped over all the information in the beginning where I told you to introduce yourself to people.
Yes, I know.
You didn't want to. You just said no.
Well, I'm 63.
You're 63. Born in
St. Louis, Missouri.
Raised in St. Louis.
St. Louis, Missouri, in the Bond Projects on 14th Street.
And where'd you meet my mom?
I met her one night at a club on 18th Street.
Oh, Lord.
I was dancing.
You was dancing?
I was very erotic in my dancing. And that was the thing that turned her on.
Oh, see how you want to tell me stuff like that, but I can't say nothing. So you were in it. You were like Prince. You was like Erotic City. Can't you see? Yeah. Like that was you.
That was me.
And so you was on the dance floor tearing it up.
Yeah.
And she saw your moves.
Yeah.
And she came over and wanted to dance with you.
She introduced herself to me, you know, and it was on and popping from there.
Oh my God. So let me ask you this, because I'm sure a lot of my listeners want to know something like this, coming from the father of me, who's a lot of people think I'm crazy. They think something's wrong with me. What, you've watched me grow up. We've had some periods in our life where we weren't communicating, mostly because I don't even get into that, but I played overseas and I kind of was gone a lot out of the country. But we've always, you know, stayed in touch and always like found our way to each other no matter what. What if somebody was saying to you, like, describe your daughter, what would you say?
I would say that she's a very strong-willed person, and she's very assertive. She's very courageous. She has a heart towards people. She has an enlightenment that's part none. And she's very determined. She's loving. She's intelligent. She has a giving heart. And she have a heart of a mother. She have a heart of a mother. One that want to make sure that she's doing the right thing for her child. Because she understands the downfall of not having a parent or a parent that can really work with her. So she's going to work with her child in a way that she missed the portion in her life. So I look at it from the standpoint that she's not a weak woman.
Mm-mm.
By no means she's weak, but she can be humbled if you come to her right.
Oh my God! Thank you. That was very nice. I'm happy that you think that of me.
Well, you know, you're my child, and I look at you from the very first day that I saw you. Our hearts was knitted together. We was joined together. I never forgotten that experience. That you was the person that taught me how to love. I didn't know how to love until you came into my life. I didn't know how to love. When you came into my life, my heart opened up widely. You know, the possibilities was endless for me because I had you before my face. And that was powerful.
You hear that, Brent? Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
It was amazing life. For me that I held you in my arms and I looked at you, and I never got over it. You know, I never could get over it. You know, so when I see Aiden, I see the reflection of you and your son. And sometimes I just stare at it, you know,
he said that. He'd be like, Grandpa be staring at me.
I just stare at him, you know. Just,
I said, I know, he's just looking at you. He just can't believe he's a granddad. This is what, your second child? Second grandchild?
He's the first.
He's your very first.
He's the very first grandchild.
Yeah.
And
but Veronica has one, right?
Right. He's three. But when I look at Aiden, I see you all over again. You know, and that is so touching for me.
I wanted to ask you this. I saw this on social media just randomly today on the way home. I was talking to Brent about it. And there's a little bit of a debate as far as women are concerned.
Okay.
And it says, and you're not on Instagram, but you've seen some of the things that I post, and I'll show it to you, but I'm going to read it to you, okay? Because okay. I want everybody to hear it. And it says, please stop glamorizing struggle love. You do not have to stick through prison, cheating, drugs, unemployment, alcoholism, abuse, neglect, no transportation, no housing, no money, no ambition, no goals, just to take a relationship's goals picture. Like just basically up front to just be like, I have a man, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of women that are agreeing with that. And this other woman, she wrote, I saw this and thought, who came up with this list? I don't want to shame anyone who created this list, but when you get married, for better or for worse, will get tested. You will have to develop through something. If you leave at the time of every struggle, you will find yourself single. No person is perfect. And to be honest, based on this list, we've dealt with unemployment where we've both lost our jobs to go into full-time ministry, no money, having candlelight and eggs for dinner for the whole first year. I lost my transportation when we first got married, and we can both say that we have neglected each other at one point in our 9 years of being together. Ambition, we didn't have much of that when we first, in the beginning, because we were depressed and nothing was working out in our life. Don't take these fleshy lists on IG and base your relationship off of them. This generation must learn to cultivate a healthy marriage and build immunity. So yes, me and my hubby struggle together, and I'm proud of it. We've grown closer and even more in love because of it. And I would struggle with him forever. He's perfect for me. Okay. So what do you think of that? Because you know, there's a thing now. Like I tell people all the time that I truly, truly feel like, because of the number of women that are in America versus men, and not just the numbers, it's just the type of men. You know, there's lots of homosexuals, there's men that are already married, there's men that aren't really anything, and there's, you know, successful men. I feel like a lot of us women are fighting for the same man, and at some point we're all gonna have to share, it seems like. What is your opinion on, you know, a woman and whether or not she should put up with certain things and stay, and or should she go and find somebody that probably doesn't exist? Like, what is your opinion on that as damn near a senior citizen? Because you have a different, you know, mindset on it.
Did you hear that, Brent?
I have to take a shot at you.
Did you hear that, Brent?
Because, like, you have a completely different perspective on this. You know, you've been married, you've been divorced, you have children now who are married and have children. So you've lived through two generations. What is your thoughts on, you know, relationships and things that happen?
Well, the lady is absolutely right, you know.
Which one?
The second lady.
Okay.
Because there is a struggle. There's a struggle that you're going to go through. And if you are willing to go through that struggle, then you can see the outcome of that. Nothing happened by accident, you know. If you want to be a bodybuilder, you have to work at it and develop a core value of building your muscles. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take some endurance. It's going to take some flexibility. It's going to take
sometimes you're going to eat something you weren't supposed to eat.
Exactly. You know,
and slow down your development.
Exactly. So it depends on how you gear your mind towards the goal that you set. If you have a goal to get or a goal to establish a relationship with a person, cultivation of that relationship is the most important thing. I'm searching for my queen now.
Right, that's why I brought this up.
I'm searching for my queen because I want to treat her with all the due respect that is due to her. It's something that every woman have in common, and that is respect, dignity, and loyalty. That's what she want from her man. She want the man to be able to acknowledge her, treat her fairly, and give her the standing ovation that is due to her. So if you want a good relationship with a woman, first of all, you got to settle in your mind what type of woman you want. I want an educated woman. She don't have to be
voluptuous. She don't have to have a wagon and the titties and the no waist.
No.
She got a pretty face. What are you into? Like what? Because you know what, well, God, Dad, everybody knows that men are visual.
Right,
you know,
right.
And you guys, it got to look right because it got to make everything lift up right.
Right.
So
the size to me is a medium size.
Okay.
I'm kind of hesitant about women who have big chests.
Why?
Because when I was a kid, I had an auntie who had a big chest, and she kind of traumatized me.
And she put you in the titties?
Yeah.
In the cleavage?
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, you know.
So now you're not a titty. That's why you're not a titty man.
I'm not that.
Okay. So your visual, she's probably got a wagon.
No, nice. not a big wagon.
Just a small little hitch.
Just a little.
Okay.
Little hitch there.
Okay, but other than that, she needs to be smart.
She needs to be smart because she needs to have confidence in herself.
Uh-huh.
You know, an intelligent woman is something that I love because I like to communicate. I like to talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to see
if she can engage in different topics,
you know, and we can discuss things, you know. I'm not insecure in myself, and she can't be insecure in herself. She don't have to be a great cook because I can cook.
Look at that. Look at that.
She don't have to be a great housekeeper because I know how to do all of those things for myself.
Okay.
Those are the things that I was taught, you know.
Okay.
We can share responsibilities, you know. She have to be engaging in entertaining because I like to entertain people, you know. I like to live, you know. I like to see someone who's not afraid to explore life,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I like to explore life. I like to know about life because you have one life to live here on earth. So there is a sense or an urgency for me to be able to come together and explore life.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm...
It's basically like having a partner.
Right.
A companion, like, you know, someone to share life with, bounce ideas off, argue with sometimes, debate, have fun, you know, have good times, just moments.
You know, and she got to be able to accept me for who I am because I'm a hugger, you know.
He is. He's very, very affectionate.
I'm very affectionate.
Yes.
You know? And I love to.
You like a woman that just wants you all up on her. She got to be okay with that.
She's right.
She can't be one of those girls that don't really want to be snuggled every night.
No.
Well, I'm glad you got it narrowed down. It took you till you were 63 to figure out
what you
wanted.
Yes.
Now, let me flip this around because this list talks about all these things, basically what a man, you know, does to a woman or doesn't have. And a lot of debates that there's a debate on Twitter that black men don't cheat, which is so stupid, but
yeah,
whatever.
It's really ignorant.
It's stupid. But a lot of people feel like the woman is supposed to put up with all these things, but a man isn't supposed to put up with it from her. What are your thoughts on that? Because I know a lot of men feel that way. They feel like Brent and I were talking about music, and I was saying how if a woman, there was a song where YG was talking about basically saying he was leaving his girlfriend because every time he goes out, his jewelry and his money and everything he got makes all the hoes want to come and give him some ass. And he's just like, I can't stay committed, you know, even though I love this girl. But I just like to just get out and enjoy life with these hoes and have a good time. If a woman says that, she's considered a hoe.
Right. That's a different standard.
Okay, so
there's a different standard that has been set in this country. You know, if I as a man would stand outside and whip out my Johnson and take a leak, there's nothing that's going to be said about that. But if you as a woman was to drop your drawers and squat, then you are a
dirty little whore.
Yeah,
Do you agree with that type of stuff?
No,
do you,
I don't.
You don't agree with those double standards?
I don't agree with those double standards, because if a man can do a thing and get away with it, and it is seen to be righteous in other men's eyes, then a woman, I'm not saying that she's supposed to do those things. But if she does those things, and he find out about it, and if he's doing those things, you know, there was a song that came out years ago, back in the 70s. I was checking out, and she was checking in. I was checking out, and she was checking in. I was checking out of the hotel, and she was checking in the hotel.
What do you mean?
I was checking out with another woman, and my girl was checking in with
another
a man. Right. And we passed by each other, but we couldn't say a word to each other.
Why? Those are the side people. They should know that you guys are together.
No, but see, that's it. They didn't know.
So they was living a double life.
A double life.
Okay.
Okay.
So you can't check one person for doing something that you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, but what if the... So I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Whatever's wrong is wrong.
It's wrong.
It doesn't matter who's doing it. And if you're okay with a man doing something, then when a woman does it, you have to be okay with her doing it too.
Exactly.
Well, got me there.
Exactly.
I got nothing. Let's see. Do you... What do you think about the current state of America with Trump as president? The last time you were on, it was right when he was elected, I believe. Was he elected when
yeah,
you were on?
You're right.
He had just been elected. Now you see the fuckery, excuse my language, of him and his effects. It's been a year now. Mm. It's been a little bit over a year he's been president. What is your opinion of the way he's running the country and some of the things that are going on?
Well, Mr. Trump is not actually running the country. He's ruining the country in the light from where the country was, trying to dismantle everything that the previous administration had done. He has a lot of insecurity within himself. Okay. And I don't believe that he's going to make a second term. I believe that he's a one-term president, that because of all of the negative things that he have done to this country and abroad, the Republican Party is going to rebel against him and ensure that he does not make it a second term.
Do you think that anyone's going to try to assassinate him?
No, I don't think that's it's going to come to that. I think what's going to happen is a scandal is going to...
A scandal? He done already had so many scandals and nothing's happened.
No, the scandal that I'm talking about is the scandal out of the investigation by Mr. Mueller. It's going
the sexual stuff you talking about, or
no, the collusion with the Russians all the other situation that is going to be
the downfall
of Donald Trump.
So you think impeachment is possible before these first four
years really, are up? I really believe impeachment is going to happen. That I believe. That I believe. Because you
was really hoping for an assassination, but I guess an impeachment.
No. you have billionaires who are paying for.
So yeah, he can't go anywhere.
Right,
they need him to do their job.
Right,
that is really sad. It's really sad.
Him and Mike Pence is going to be impeached.
And who's going to be the president? Hillary?
No, there is somebody else.
Obama.
No.
What if he gets to come back?
No, he can't come back.
You know, there was a chance right before he was sworn in that if something happened, that he could have been impeached and Obama would have been president. Did you know that? There was this law, and somebody had put it on social media, and I was just like, what if that happened? Like, if something happens and before you're sworn in, even though you won,
yeah,
that
before you sworn in,
yes, yeah, Obama would continue to be the president. Yeah. And they would have to do a whole new little thing. That would have been cool.
Right, right.
Just get him out of there from the get-go.
Well, from that standpoint, it would have had to have, Mike Pence would have to have been taken out too. Because mm-hmm.
Then he would have took his spot. Right. Instead of, yeah, damn. Right. Yeah, we would have screwed either way then. We'd have been stuck with one of them.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to let you go because today you're leaving.
Yes,
You're going
I'm
back to St. Louis. Look at the temperature?
Yeah, it's about 45 degrees.
Well, that's not too bad.
No, it's not. It's not
okay.
Bad.
It's not bad.
And Brent, I really enjoyed your company, son. The only time I get a chance to watch soccer on TV
is when you're here.
When I'm with you.
Yes, Brent watches soccer. So
oh, my God. He's good.
Yeah. He plays FIFA. Yeah, that too. Mm-hmm. But Dad, I'm glad that you came down and hung out with us.
I'm glad I came too.
Sweetie. And you have to come back. Aiden loves when you're here. I know he's gonna cry when you leave today. He's gonna lose it. He has been counting down because I told him how many days you'd be here.
Yeah.
And every day he's been counting it down, going, "Oh my God, it's getting so close!" Like he really is sad that you're leaving.
Yeah.
And so I just want to tell you how much joy it brings to me to see my son, you know, having a relationship with his grandfather. It's so awesome because I didn't have a relationship with a grandfather at all. So I don't really know feeling, you know. Right. So I'm glad that he gets to experience, you know, a grandfather like you, especially like a proud black man, you know, because Brent is light skinned and so he don't really count. <his point. laughs> You know, it's just different because, you know, Brent has always, you know, told me like when we first started dating and everything, and I used to talk to him about, you know, the way the police treat black men in the hood. And Brent grew up in one of the dirtiest hoods of North Philly, and he always told me that nobody ever messed with him. He never had any problems with police. Women didn't clench their purses when he walked by. And it's because he's really pale skin, you know. And I said, your son is not going to live that life, and I want you to teach him about it. And he's just like, I didn't live that life. I people didn't racially profile me. Like, you know, he just tells me all this stuff that he used to do and just get away with it because people thought he was white his whole life. And nobody looked at him. And it's just hilarious to me. So it's like, I like that he gets to see somebody just as black. You are black. I told Aiden I had a surprise for him. And he said, what is it? And I said, it's big and it's black. And Aiden, get on the mic. What did you say it was?
Batman.
You thought it was Batman, but it was big black grandpa, huh?
Yeah.
You were still happy though, right?
He married.
You know, grandpa's leaving today.
But it's going to be late, right?
In a couple of hours. We got to take him to the airport. We should just go have dinner. And then take him to the airport. Don't be sad. You had fun with him though, right?
Oh, we had fun the other day.
Yeah, good time.
Yeah, you know, I was tickling in him. Boy, we had some fun that day.
Yes. Well, I'm gonna end this podcast so we can get off these people's airwaves. Thank you guys so much for listening. It's Dad, thank you. What, Aiden?
Our show with Aiden Grimes.
Oh, God. I appreciate you guys. Let me know what you thought of this episode. My dad is so awesome to me. And, you know, maybe he's not to you, but I don't care because he's mine. Peace. Peace.